available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. We got a lot of stuff to get to today. Got some somber news we're going to get to at the top, but I want to let everyone know if you have any questions or comments for the show, you can still email us, even though there's no more games going on. Well, bowl games coming up, but no more regular season Pac-12 games. You can email us, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678 or tweet us at Pac-12podcast. And the website, of course, is Pac-12podcast.com. And if you have the Apple Podcasting app, we do appreciate leaving us a five-star review. I love that. Five-star rating, some kind of review. You can trash us. You can say something nice about us. It's a little weird if you do that, but that's fine. We like that too. As long as you leave us a five-star rating, it does help to grow the show. We think it does. That's what we're told. But I don't know. We keep saying this, but it's good. We love it if you can do that. Dave, I don't know if we have any new ones this week.
No.
Okay.
No. No new ones. Everyone is failing miserably. Miserably.
Right. And if you're watching us on our YouTube channel, we are getting up there. I think we're over 700 subscribers on there now. We've been doing this for a couple months.
We need
months.
To get to 1,000.
We got
to
get to 1,000.
Serve these people ads.
Right. They're going to like keep it just below.
Yes.
So please, please subscribe over on our YouTube channel for the Pac-12 podcast, Podcast of Champions. Check it out. I call it a simulcast. Dave doesn't call it a simulcast. If you're listening on the Apple Podcasting app,
we can both be right about this thing. There's a thing that a simulcast is, and this is
That's
not
what
that.
This is it.
No,
yeah.
No, we are one casting.
We love it. But yeah, so we're over there on the YouTube. If you're on YouTube and you're watching us live or watching the replay, whatever it is, thank you. It's been a lot of people, but it's been growing every week. That is great. We will be monitoring the chat room, the chat box, and I'll be able to put your comments up on the screen for all that. Also want to thank our sponsor, MyBookie. We're going to get to a couple more picks this week. I'm two behind David, and we got seven bowl games for me to catch up, but we're both doing pretty well. I've been very happy with MyBookie account this season, which is nice. But if you're going to go over there and you want to join along in the fun, you can bet NFL games, you can bet NBA, of course, what's left of the college football season. You can do all that too over at MyBookie. The promo code we like to use is Pac-12, and that will give you a 50% deposit match. So whatever you put in there, you want to put $100 in there, you'll be $150 to bet around with. Or you can go do up to $1,000. Check it out. I got to I want to try to finish strong, but I got to collect on my Arizona State under 6.5 wins. That was a good one. So I was happy about that one and did some good parlays at the end. I got to see if I can catch Dave, see if I can catch him in the last couple of weeks. But we are both well above 500, so pretty cool. I'm 49-40-2 against the spread, and you are 51-38-2 against
right.
the spread this season. So pretty
right.
good.
I am 13 games over 500. You are 9.
Right. So I'm 2 games behind us. That's good.
Correct. But I'm 13. You're 9.
Nice. Yeah. But.
Not unlike the score of the 2006 UCLA-USC game.
That is true. 13-9.
13-9.
And as Mark says in the chat, smash that like button. If you are watching on YouTube, please like this video.
So okay. Which bowl game, here's the real question, which bowl game is going to be like Eric McNeil's interception? And which of them is going to be like Aaron Perez's like 60-yard punt?
Mm. We'll see.
It's the real question, right?
Yeah. How is it going to end?
Yeah.
It'd be very UCLA disappointing of you for you to lose the lead at the very end. Wouldn't that be great? I'm going to do this. I'm going to get some strategy. So we'll see.
Strategy's worked so well for you in the past.
It's been good. Smash the like button if you are watching. And if you hit that little notification button, it'll let you know when we go live. We're trying to put it out a little ahead of time. And we've been doing that. We're putting up the little announcements on all of the 247 Pac-12 site so you can see when we're going live. But this is a lot of fun to do these. We'll keep trying to do them. And we'll see the holiday schedule. We're going to have to do another show to preview the next round of bowl games. There'll be some travel and things going on. Dave is definitely going to go cover the UCLA Bowl. No, he doesn't do that. But
no.
I have to go to Dallas to cover the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah.
But we'll figure out
my stuff. My guess is we'll do a show next week,
yeah,
and then we'll probably wait until January to do a recap show of the rest of the bowl games.
Okay.
That'd be my guess.
That would make
based
sense.
Based on our schedules.
When I get back from everything and stuff. Okay. We do have some very somber news to report, like I mentioned at the top. A couple days ago, we learned that Mike Leach had some sort of medical incident. He had to go in the hospital, was in critical condition. Wake up this morning, today is Tuesday, to learn that Mike Leach, former Texas Tech head coach, Washington State, at Mississippi State now, passed away at age 61. He was as unique of a character as you could find, right? And in college football, and just one of those guys when he was in the Pac-12 media day was just better when he was around. And just really sad to hear about this. And sometimes we get like kind of generic just coach speak all the time, and Mike Leach was definitely not that. He was someone that was really smart. I mean, he would talk to you about history, Geronimo or Pirates or whatever you want to talk about. His, didn't like candy corn and fruitcake and he just had so many quirks about him, and was always fun. It was always entertaining, and would just, if you just pulled up to him to say hello, like he would have a full on conversation with you. He's not like some coach that's going to be like, hey, I'm the coach of this school. No, he'll talk to anybody. It's a sad day. He had such a coaching tree under him, learning early, like that spread offensive stuff from Hal Mumme and, how that prolificated throughout, college football and what they did at Texas Tech, the winningest coach there and, what he's able to do at Washington State and now in the SEC. There was always an interesting story with Mike Leach. And, you see all the sports writers, there's obituaries and stuff coming out. I love going back and reading the stories.
Yeah.
What he did, then, not like being eulogized now, I'll probably get to some of those, but there's just so many great stories that have come out. And if you forget them, you can't read them again. But it's just a shame. So we wanted to talk about that at the top.
And I actually made an effort to do that this morning because I knew we were going to do the show. Because the last few years, I had more, I would say, more negative feelings about Leach generally because of a lot of the player issues that had come out and all that kind of stuff. And so I was making an effort this morning to go back and read the Michael Lewis story in the New York Times. Remember that one? It was about when he was at Texas Tech, when he was first kind of really making it apparent that his system was going to work as a head coach. And it was this just expansive story, all the pirate stuff. Geronimo, I believe, was involved.
Yes.
But it was all the, like the principles of the air raid, spreading out your receivers super wide, exploring the entire horizontal aspect of the field, doing the wide splits with the offensive line, all this stuff that like got me, I would say that story got me thinking more about like analytical sides of football and like, well, okay, why are they doing it this way? Why don't they do it a different way? And that was just as a fan. Obviously for guys who are much more well-versed in it, it's been a crazy revolution in college football, and you can attribute it. I mean, Hal Mumme, sure, but I mean, Mike Leach is the proof of concept. This is the guy who made it work. Nobody else could have gone into Lubbock, Pullman, and Starkville and emerged. I think he won 60% of his games or just thereabouts.
I think so.
That's insane. But I read that. I read Spencer Hall's piece this morning about a boating trip they took off of Key West when he was in that interregnum between Texas Tech and Washington State when he was fighting the lawsuit.
Yeah.
And it was just, I think everybody's complicated. Everyone's got their own you know, foibles. And I would think, you know, because he's a public figure, a lot more of his were public.
Very public, yeah.
And so the player issues, and I'm not just talking about Adam James. I'm talking about some of the stuff that happened at Washington State as well, and just kind of the tenor of what he would say about players sometimes. But there's also, I mean, you read anything from these writers, and it's obvious how generous he was with his time to all of these people, yeah. and curious about them in a way that is just, I mean, asking people questions and being actually interested in them is one of the best things you can do as a person.
Yeah.
When you're talking to people. And so to have that level of impact on people, and I mean, just go search on your Twitter. And these are not people who are like, because the whole thing is, it's a lot of it's politics. But these are not people who are aligned with him politically saying, yeah, I had a, you know, a really positive relationship with him because, you know, we had these long, expansive conversations. So, you know, people contain multitudes. But the level of innovation for football and the level of, uniqueness, you know, we are dealt. So here's the thing about college football coaches. Most of them are not great, like human beings, like most of them have their own complicated stuff and all that kind of stuff. But he was also very interesting. There was a lot bringing up your book. He was also very interesting. He was open. You know, this is a guy who didn't care if you knew what plays he was going to call. Didn't care if you were observing practice. Was, you know, a guy who was like taking interviews like leading up to practice, would respond to a text message with a 30-minute phone call, explain anything you wanted him to explain. It's a big loss for college football, and I think there's no question about it. The college football world just got a lot less interesting. And not just because of like weird stuff Mike Leach would say, but because of what he was doing on the field, because of, again, that openness. It's something we've talked about on this show a lot.
Yeah.
So many coaches think they are running like the Manhattan Project. and Leach understood it, that first, it's not the Manhattan Project level of secrecy. It's not that important. And second, anything you're doing that's that complicated is probably dumb. I mean, the big thing that Leach was doing was, we're going to run like five plays. And we're just going to run the hell out of them in practice. And that's the only thing we're going to practice. And then we're going to go out in the games. And even if they know what we're going to call, they're still not going to be able to defend it. And in the latter stages of his career, you know, Washington State and Mississippi State, it took longer for it to get going. But it was still capable of doing it in big games. It just took longer to get the execution down. But if you remember watching Texas Tech, it was like, yeah, nobody can stop this. Nobody can stop any of this. So, yeah, I think sad day for college football, sad day. I mean, I'm sad about it. You know, this is a guy who he was just 61. And, you know, anytime, you know, you're having massive heart failure at 61, that's a sad and sudden death. So RIP to a unique man.
The Pirate. Yeah, if you guys haven't checked out the book, Swing Your Sword, I'm going to put it up here. I have it in the office. Mike Leach, but Bruce Feldman wrote it with him. His name's not even on the book, but you know, I've been friends with Bruce for a long time, and he's been close with Mike Leach. And I remember when they were doing like the book signings and everything back in the day. But weird story about that. Like this, Bruce. When I had met Bruce, he was working ESPN. He was doing some TV stuff, but, you know, he was like one of their, you know, main college football writers. And he was there for 17 years. He writes this book with Mike Leach. And if you remember, like, there was the whole thing where Craig James, who was, remember him? He was an analyst for ESPN, and his son was on the team.
I heard about him, something to do with him and prostitutes.
I'm not sure.
I mean, we might just have to go. I think it was like five of them.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to speculate, but somebody else can maybe put it in the chat.
Just check it out. But so his son was like eighth string walk-on, like wide receiver. I forget the exact story, but like wide receiver on the team and wasn't doing much. And there was a confrontation between Craig James, who was apparently like this helicopter parent, and Mike Leach. And there was an accusation that he was in concussion. They put him, locked him in a broom closet or something. It was all this crap. That's, I think, with the lawsuit you were talking about, there was like wrongful termination. But anyway, like ESPN completely backed like Craig James. And Mike Leach was telling his side of the story in the book. And Bruce, who works for ESPN, was writing the book. And from what Bruce was telling me, when this was going on, he was like, hey, telling the people at ESPN, like, by the way, like, Mike Leach had some pretty, you know, rough things to say about Craig James in this book and what ESPN was doing. And they're like, yeah, yeah, that's fine, whatever. Hopefully Bruce is okay with me telling this. And he was like, okay, that's fine, whatever. And then until the very end, when the first excerpt came out from the book, they're like, call him into the office, like, what is this? I'm like, dude, I told you guys, like, he wrote that, like, this is what he's saying about you guys. And this was right before the ESPYs, and Bruce was supposed to go to the ESPYs, and they, like, basically shut down his Twitter. Like, he's, like, not supposed to tweet anymore. He couldn't go to the ESPYs, and I ended up picking him up at Manhattan Beach, and we went out, like, somewhere in Manhattan Beach, and he was just, like, this was a company he was with for 17 years. Like, this is his whole, and he's a dude that, like, he went to, like, four different junior colleges. Like, he, you know, he wasn't, like, went to, like, Northwestern and was going to be a sports writer from the very beginning. Like, he's just someone that had, like, a different path to get to where he was, and I just remember it just, it wasn't, you know, he just wasn't himself that night. It was just like, what, you know, what's going on here? And then it was like the following Pac-12 media day where I like drove him. He like, there was a hashtag free Bruce. Do you remember that? Like mm-hmm. they had kind of shut him down and he started working, I think at CBS at the time. But we went to like Pac-12 media day together. It was like his first like coming out thing. But all of this because of the book with Mike Leach. And it was just like, it changed his career because of what, you know, what was going on. But I think it was, you know, it was basically like you find out like Craig James' kid was kind of a piece of shit, right? And it was, you know, he was just like, and but ESPN completely backed Craig James at the time. So I don't know, but that was,
yeah,
that's my remembrance of the story. So if I get a few details wrong, my apologies. But yeah, that was,
yeah. Certainly a unique character. I think it's probably safe to say college football is never going to see something similar.
No. There was a funny quote. I think it was Dennis Dodd was retweeting or whatever, but he was going back. I think Mike Leach, the story was that Mike Leach was like, there was some cool route concept that they were running in Green Bay, and he like drove like 6 hours to go to Green Bay. He was like Iowa Wesleyan or something at the time, to ask this coach about like how this route tree worked. And he would say like, if I saw a great high school play, I would go there and learn. Whatever it is, like, I want to learn how this works. And then he would incorporate that. And his quote was something, paraphrasing, it was like, you know, 1989, that was like the summer of love for the spread offense. So sort of like, you know, how it was built, you know, how this, all these concepts, like you said, like people, there was like theories and stuff, and he like put it into practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, just look at those places. I mean, Texas Tech had never and still has never won anything without Mike Leach. I mean, literally just have winning seasons.
Yeah.
Washington State has had a couple of brief moments, but for a consistency period, I don't know that there's anyone better than Leach. I'm pretty assured that if he'd, you know, had a justifiably longer life, he would have done the same at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
You know, I think if you give him 8 more years there, I think by, you know, the 6th or 7th year, he's probably already being a tough out, and by the end, he would have been winning 9-10 games a year.
Do you remember when he first got there, he gets KJ Costello to transfer in? I think they beat LSU to start the season, and everyone's like, is KJ Costello like the best quarterback in the SEC? And then like,
nope.
Shit kind of fell apart after that. It was just like, he was always making some kind of, he was always making noise. He was never not interesting. You know,
yeah, so he finished, all told for his career, 158 and 107, and never at a school that was anything other than historically bottom half of its conference.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's just, and, you know, this is what he was doing at Mississippi State. So he went 4-7, then 7-6, then 8-4. You could see it building. Improvement every year. No doubt they would have eventually broken through into a potential contender there.
One of the things, like the best compliments you can give someone, and this is something I say to like my mother, it's just like, we're all existing in this world. Like, you and I are in this room together.
Are we?
We are. Like, there's, you know, we're talking to people that we don't know online. If you go to the grocery store, if you go get Starbucks, whatever it is, like, you're going to interact with people. And there's certain people that just whatever the interaction is, whatever you're doing, they make it better. Like you're just – if you're going to be watching – be a fan of college football and you hear the halftime interview, he makes your day better because he's going to say something that's interesting. Whatever it is, he made college football better. He made – I mean, 7-on-7 better. The NFL – like people so much got better because of what he was doing. But everything he touched, it seemed to be – he had his own spin on things. You might not agree with everything he said, obviously. You can ruffle some feathers, but just made things better. And I just love that. I love that about someone where you're just like, if you wouldn't be worried about the interaction, like, oh man, now we got to talk to Mike Leach. Like, it's never going to be that way. It's going to be, oh, we get to talk to Mike Leach, or we get to like watch this game that he's in, or whatever it is. It's always going to get better for whatever reason. So he's just one of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So very sad. Wish his family the best.
All right. RIP Mike Leach, thoughts and prayers. And let's move on. We got some news to get to. There's actually tons of news. So like this is pretty much a whole show of news. I think we only got like
two
questions.
Favorite kind of show.
Your favorite show. All these notes that I put in. Stanford has made a hire.
They have.
Since we talked last. His name is Troy Taylor.
Zodiac Killer.
No. That would have been great. Do you remember Utah's offense a couple years?
Yes.
Troy Taylor?
Yes.
He went to Sac State, man. Not an easy place to win. Start crushing up there. But he is your new head coach at Stanford University. Used to be a Cal quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's coaching Stanford.
I was keeping the Bay. I was surprised to learn how old he is. I did not think he was 54.
He's 54?
He's 54.
Wow. I don't know what you mean. Could I look at this photo and like, does he look older in the photo? Can you see the photo?
I'm not sure. I'll have to wait for the delay. Oh, yeah. No, he looks that age. But I just thought he was younger. Like, and maybe it's because he's at like still the relative beginning of his coaching journey because he hasn't been a head coach until Sac State. Anyway, my general sense of this one is it's a lot better than I thought they would do. It's a lot better of a hire than I thought they were going to go with. I thought they were going to go like Mike Bloomgren or some crap like that.
He's actually done okay at Rice.
He's done okay for Rice, but it's still not really. I mean, Todd Graham won like 9 games at Rice. It's not really good.
Okay.
There was also the option of Jason Garrett. Stu Mandel reported that as another finalist. To walk out of a group of finalists that probably included Jason Garrett and Mike Bloomgren and come out with Troy Taylor.
Oh my God, could you have
that's
hated
a win.
Him more?
That would have been so bad.
Like it could like maybe like okay, so Clancy Pendergast.
And on top of everything else, he's a ginger? No. He has no soul.
Jack Del Rio, like all those Jeff Fisher and then like Jason Garrett. That would have been your four worst.
Would have been the four horsemen. Taylor, I think, could succeed there. He's obviously put together a sterling record at Sac State. It's the same thing, really. Take the names away. It's the same thing as Deion Sanders. Okay, you're taking a chance. You're a bottom half Pac-12 team, and you're taking a chance on a really good FCS. Okay, that's fine. That makes sense. That's a process that makes sense to me. You're taking a chance on a guy who's a good coach, and you're hoping he recruits well enough and does the whole thing, but it's the same principles that brought Jim Harbaugh from San Diego. That was D2, but it's the same thing. You hope it works. You hope it translates. And if it isn't, you're probably not out that much money. I mean, what are they paying him? $3 million a year, probably? It's probably not much more.
Like a third of what you pay David.
Yeah. So I like it. I think it's the approach a lot of schools should take more with their coaching hires. Don't try for a big name that's going to cost you a lot of money. Who's also not a proven quantity. Jason Garrett has never coached college football ever at any level. I'm baffled by a process that elicits him as one of your finalists in this day and age. Troy Taylor, that makes sense. You'll see if it works, and if it doesn't, you're probably not out that much money, and then you can try again.
Yeah,
that's the way you got to think about college football hires. You're not marrying somebody, you're dating, and so. Date this guy. He's not going to cost you that much money. You're not going to have to pay for two expensive dinners. And then if it doesn't work out, you can dump him and date somebody else.
Nice. He was a 30-8 at Sac State. They scored 41 points a game. He was the number four offense in FCS. So that's pretty good. I think the goal is to bring Stanford's offense to more modern, you know, more 21st century. I think you will like that. That's something you would like. He said he wants every – so very different than Coach Prime, who said basically, like, all you are expendable, go to the portal, I don't give a shit. He was like, I want every player to come back. Now, that's not been happening. There's a lot of players in the portal already. We'll get to portal stuff. But and he's going to be calling the plays. So he'll be the head coach calling plays. And, you know, I think that's not a bad thing there. But, yeah, he wants everyone to come back. And it was funny because he was asked about, like, obviously Stanford got one transfer in last year. And if you remember the RJ Abadia story, it was literally a dude that just called David Shaw and said, hey, I'm already here. I played at Oklahoma last year. Can I play on your team? Like, they didn't go get the transfer. The transfer just fell in their lap. So they were asked, like, hey, do you have to, like, modernize, you know, Stanford? He said, his quote was, they were perfectly positioned for the new college football landscape, but said they also have to make some adjustments. So if you're perfectly positioned, I don't think you've got to make adjustments. But, yes, they're going to make some major adjustments. We'll see how much they do. Because they are going to be losing, they're losing players already. You're losing more now. Like, the roster he gets might just suck. And if you can't bring in transfers, it's going to continue to suck. So I don't care how good he is, you're going to need to bring in players. So will they change their philosophy? That's the biggest, if I'm a Stanford fan, that's the biggest concern for me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. I think also, you know, something that Harbaugh did early was installing a system that was, you know, zigging when everyone else was zagging, that I think helped differentiate Stanford, and they did it extremely well. I don't know what Troy Taylor is going to do. I don't know if he's going to run the same stuff he was doing at Sac State, what it's going to look like. But I'm really interested in this. Like, I'm really interested to see how this goes, because I don't think it doesn't begin with talent acquisition at Stanford. It begins with what sort of system you're going to install, because you have to be a differentiator there. I don't think you're just going to get away with running the same stuff everyone else is running. So I'm interested to see what that looks like. And then if that looks good, here's the thing with Stanford is, yeah, okay, transfers, the whole thing. Stanford has a unique recruiting proposition that will always get players if they look like they have a pulse, because the academics are so good that parents from all walks of life understand
they would love for
a Stanford education is a Stanford education.
Yeah.
And you're going there no matter what. So you have reach nationally. I think people who dog the Stanford job, it's a little bit of recency bias. When it's going even semi well, they still get players. Look at, like, the Trent Edwards years. Like, they still had a few guys because they had, you know, they still have that quality. They're going to be able to recruit quarterback talent. They're going to be able to recruit offensive line. And the question is, I think, largely front seven defense that's the one where it's got to be a real confluence of circumstances to get them players. And they had a good one in the beginning of, you know, the last decade, 2010-ish, when they started recruiting a bunch of guys. But And also they had some steroids. So get the roid program going again, and install a unique system and see where this goes.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see how that plays out there. But Stanford's got their man. So we have another head coach in the Pac-12. Also, we had a major award in the Pac-12. We're going to talk about Caleb Williams winning the Heisman Trophy. So first time.
He is man.
Yeah, he is, man. First time since Marcus Mariota, Pac-12 player, had won the Heisman. The other three finalists were all in the college football playoff. So that was one note that Caleb Williams won the award, but he was the only guy that wasn't in the college football playoff. What do you think, Dave? Is it good for the conference? But, like, is it not that big of a deal? What do you think about all this?
I don't think it's a driver of anything, but I think it's a signal. I think it's a bellwether. Caleb Williams winning it is a sign that this was a pretty good year for the Pac-12. You know, you had an 11-1 regular season USC. You had really good Utah, Oregon, UCLA, Oregon State teams. So I think it's a affirmation of what we all saw. I don't know that it signals anything for the future, except that if Caleb Williams is coming back, correct?
He was a true sophomore.
True sophomore. So,
he said a year or two.
He's not transferring again?
He's not. He said a year or two. Which I don't think he's coming for two.
No, probably not. But he's coming back. So you've got a sophomore who just won the Heisman who's coming back. So that's all these.
Michael Penix finished in the top 10.
Yep. So this is an interesting one. So everyone got on board the Penix bandwagon for the Heisman, which was really interesting to me because I would have said Bo Nix had a better claim to it and was clearly much more essential to his team's success because as soon as he, you know, had a leg injury, that team went in the tank. But I would have liked to have seen Bo Nix finish higher because I think and maybe it was a little bit of too much information. People had watched a little too much Bo Nix at Auburn, and so they just couldn't get on board with it. But his numbers, like his underlying numbers, were better than Penix. I mean, Penix had the grand yardage total.
Right. But he led the nation in passing yards, right?
Yeah, but like that's, I don't know. I look at those like kind of total stats as a little bit misleading. You know, Nix was also a very, very dynamic runner. So I don't know. Anyway, it's good for the Pac-12 that there was another Pac-12 final or Pac-12 top 10 guy or whatever. It means people were noticing and paying attention to the Pac-12 in a way. And I missed Washington. Washington also having a very good team this year, 10-2. So, yeah, I mean, it's good. But I think it's, again, it's just confirmation of what we all watched this year rather than like a signal for the future, except to say Penix and Williams are both coming back. And I don't think we've heard anything on Bo Nix. He's eligible to come back, too.
I think he's leaning to coming back from what I've heard, but I don't know for sure what's going on there. But my ballot, I love to have West Coast representation on there. I had the first two. I thought Max Duggan was great this year at TCU. I had him second, had Caleb Williams first, but I put Michael Penix at third, just kind of give a little more West Coast flair. But yeah, it's cool that he finished in the top 10. If Bo Nix comes back, there's always going to be transfers. But yeah, those three guys weren't, you know, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, Caleb Williams weren't in the conference last year.
Yeah, think about this.
like, that's crazy.
What was it, 2 years ago where we were like, oh my God, the state of quarterback play in the Pac-12 is horrible?
It was.
And now, I mean, I think you could make a case really easily if Bo Nix comes back that there are three legit Heisman contenders at quarterback in the Pac-12 next year. Like legit ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not counting, you know, what could be done at other spots. I mean, there's potential at some other programs as well, but three known quantities coming back who are all elite players at that position is a really, really good situation for the conference to be in its last year of existence.
Yeah. Nice. But there's also some other awards. I think Caleb Williams won like the Maxwell Award, but I wanted to get to the Pac-12 awards. I don't know if you had any thoughts on this. Caleb Williams ends up being the offensive player of the year. Tuli Tuipulotu, who led the nation in sacks, was the defensive player of the year. So you got the defensive player of the year on the, you know, one of the worst defenses in Pac-12, which is a little different. But the offensive freshman of the year, Damon Martinez, he was just an absolute stud. On the defensive side, the defensive freshman of the year, the Utah linebacker, Lander Barton. He was great. The coaches, they shared it. Kalen DeBoer at Washington and Jonathan Smith at Oregon State. And then we got all the first team, second team. I mean, there was last year, like you would have, you know, who was the first team? Was it Keaton Slovis or something? Was like first team quarterback. Yes. Now you get like DTR being left off and Bo Nix being left off. Stuff like that is kind of crazy. But anything from the awards, the Pac-12 awards that you just like, that didn't make any sense to me or you liked or whatever?
I mean, there's always stuff on the margins. I didn't hate really any of it. I think if you were looking at it broadly, like if you're looking at, okay, who are the best offenses in the league? It's a little bit silly that UCLA only had two players on the first and the second team offense. But at the same time, besides Zach Charbonnet and Antonio Maffei, who are you putting in? It was kind of like an aggregate thing. In total, these parts worked well together. I think Oregon State only having two second team linemen, I think, is a mistake. Oregon State's offensive line was better than that. And nobody's judging offensive line correctly ever. I mean, are these voted on by the media or the...
These are the coaches that vote on these ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the SIDs. One of these Oregon State offensive linemen probably should have been first team. Pick one. Don't care. But other than that, I mean, I don't think it was... I mean, Roma Dunze as a first team wide receiver is a little bit surprising to me. Probably would have gone Dorian Singer there. Defensively, I mean, I think it's, it was such a mixed bag this year, but Oregon State had arguably the best defense in the league, and they only had three on the first or second team defense. I just think there probably were some issues with how we're grading or judging these things that, you know, USC and UCLA have anybody in the first or second team defense. But yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's the same crap as always.
Yeah. We had, I think it was, Destiny in the chat wants to go about the Lou Groza Award or whatever. Lou Groza Award.
Yeah, Cardi in the USA. That is the
He didn't win that though.
Yeah, but that's the
kicker.
No, who you're talking about is the Zodiac Killer.
Oh yeah, yeah. But he didn't win. You want us to talk about an award that the Stanford guy didn't win? It went to
you know what he shouldn't have done? Shouldn't have missed that extra point.
Christopher Dunn.
Otherwise it would have been a Cardi in the USA.
Congrats to Christopher Dunn. From NC State, one of my favorite kickers.
I've always been a big fan of Christopher Dunn.
Yeah, never heard of him. Don't know about him, but yeah, very cool. All right, let's see. What else do we want to get to? Oh, we got to talk a little bit of. We got to talk some Coach Prime.
Coach Prime.
Yeah, it's recruiting's picking up, mm-hmm. transfer portal stuff picking up. Any thoughts? I'm curious to see how this plays out because he's someone that just is like a self-promoter, obviously. He's rubbed people the wrong way, which I don't quite get. But if he's going to be like, I don't talk to the media, I just talk to my own camera crew and then you guys can get stuff out of that, that'll be a little bit weird. But what are any initial thoughts from the first couple weeks of Coach Prime?
I mean, he's getting them involved in a lot of situations, a lot of recruiting situations that they wouldn't have been involved in under Carl Durrell. That's for sure. That's for goddamn sure. We'll have to see. I mean, it's the same. I think we're still in the wait and see. I think he's made some good coach hires for sure. I think that's been impressive so far. And he's still coaching Jackson State through this weekend. So,
right.
I think we're going to start seeing a little bit more fireworks potentially starting this weekend. I think they're going to have they're going to have a pretty big recruiting weekend this coming weekend. He's going to finish the Celebration Bowl and then be there. So I think they're hoping to close on some guys and then head into February and potentially land some bigger fish. But, you know, I think we're not going to know the whole story until probably after spring ball for Deion Sanders at Colorado for 2023. Because I think they're going to hit the transfer portal hard right now, but I think they're also going to do the next round after spring practice, because that's when the next window is, right? People can enter the portal again heading into the summer.
Yeah, it's 60-day one or something, or is it 45-day window this time, I think?
I like the window idea, and I think it works a lot better for everyone, and it makes it more of an event for us to cover.
You know what? Let me, little mini rant here. December's too fucking crowded right now. Yeah. Stop this. Go back to the old signing day. Right now, you're a head coach. So you get, you're traveling for award shows or you're getting ready for your bowl game. Well, the portal opens up. You got to recruit the guys that are on your team. You got to go try to get other people.
And if you've got a bowl game this weekend, you can't use this for visits. That's the really shitty part. If you're Jonathan Smith, you can't have official visits this weekend.
You're getting ready for your bowl game.
And
guess what? Signing day is just around the corner. This is a huge, there's too much going on right now. Stop the signing period because the portal is like its own signing period. That's its own thing. And you're doing a disservice to all these high school players that are like, hey man, I'm signing with this school. And then all of a sudden they get you're a linebacker and they get two linebackers out of the portal. They're like, oh, that kind of sucks. It's just going to, I think you're making this worse. You're creating more portal traffic by piling this all together. I can't believe they haven't fixed this yet. We've known about this for a couple years, but now you got the portal window. I think coaches are pushing back look, this is just too much.
What it should be is there should be two portal windows still. I like that, but make it so it's after the final after the national championship game is the when the portal opens. So that incentivizes guys to still participate in their bowl games. Mm. And not to say that guys still shouldn't opt out if they feel like it. Go ahead. But you've seen a couple situations where guys are going into bowl games and like Keaton Slovis elected to transfer because he wanted to enter the portal early enough to get interest, right?
Yeah.
But is he going to participate in their bowl game? It creates this awkward thing. UCLA has a couple of guys who entered the portal, including their kicker, who's going to participate in the bowl game, but he's in the portal right now.
Interesting.
So there's just weird stuff that's created because guys want to get their names in so they can be contacted to, you know, start to iron out options while still preparing for bowl games. It's an unintended consequence, I think, of when they were setting up these windows, because they were not anticipating it being guys who are part of successful teams, integral part of successful teams.
Yeah.
So set that after the national championship game. Make it whatever, January 10th or whatever the day is. And then have it still be the 45-day window, however long it is that they can sign after signing day. What's that? What's high school recruits after signing day? How long can they still sign?
I think there might not even be a limit. There's a first day. It's not like the signing period was just like you can sign at that point, but you couldn't sign before.
So set the transfer portal window.
And you don't even need to sign. You can just like come to campus and sign get a
30-day
financial aid agreement.
30-day window after January 10th or whatever it is. For them to sign, and then people know their roster is going into spring ball. They do spring ball. You realize you're fifth on the depth chart. Then you have another period to enter the transfer portal heading into whatever, mid-June. And then everyone has their rosters set. There's no ability to add more players at that point. And that's all fair and equitable. I agree with you on December. It's stupid. So go back to the old high school signing period, because yes, January official visits were great for players because they got to get it done after their seasons. I mean, because you don't want to destroy high school football while you're doing all of this. And some guys are in this unfair position where they're like, do I skip my high school game to go on this official visit?
Right.
Or do I not do this official visit that I want to do to a school that is, you know, enticing to me? So just change it back. The transfer portal window allows teams to build rosters in real time, and you still have the high school thing in February, but go back to the old thing.
Yeah. They need to go back. This blows. I hate it. Go back to the old way. There's just too much going on, in December right now. So Deion Sanders did hire Jackson State offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, Brett Bartolone. He's the wide receiver coach. They brought him in. Defensive coordinator Charles Kelly. So he was the associate defensive coordinator and safeties coach at Alabama.
Chip Kelly.
Charles Kelly. Not him.
Same guy.
Sean. So this is the bigger one. Sean Lewis. I don't know if you've seen. He's going to come in as the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, if you remember.
Yeah, Kent State head coach. Yep. So that flash fast offense. So I think his staff is pretty complete or almost complete.
Yep, coming together.
Okay. We also got a hire from Cal.
Jake Spavital.
Yeah. He's the offensive coordinator. So yeah. He was the Bears OC in 2016 when Cal led the Pac-12 in offense.
Yeah, no, it's a legit hire.
You like it?
Yeah, I think
offensive
that's a
coordinator
good one.
West Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a good hire. He was not successful as the Texas State head coach.
No.
Coming back to be an offensive coordinator, I think that is his level. He's a good offensive coordinator. He was pretty good at Texas A&M, I have no doubt he will help to modernize Cal if Justin Wilcox allows it.
Will he?
He's a defensive coach who obviously has a ton of influence on his offense. Obviously, I mean, he made, right. What did he have? He had Bo Baldwin that one year as the offensive coordinator, and Dookie, again. He obviously has a ton of influence on that. I'm hoping Spavital has enough juice to make this happen, because he's a, you know, kind of a classic, he was a Malzahn guy, but he also has some air raid to him. This will be a modern offense if Wilcox allows it.
Yeah. Speaking of Bo Baldwin, he's at Arizona State now.
Yep.
Which when he was hired, you felt like, wow, they had a really fun offense at Eastern Washington, I believe it was. And
yep.
It just never worked. But yeah, how much is that, you know, that Wilcox was kind of controlling what he could do? Interesting to see he goes with Kenny Dillingham, who he could call the plays. If if Baldwin sucks, you're just like, get out of here. I'm going to call the plays. It's funny. If you probably, you know, that Monday Night Football game, the Patriots were playing, and, you know, you got Mac Jones, the former Alabama quarterback, and Bill Belichick basically took a defensive coach and made him the offensive play caller. And you could see last week, like, Mac Jones was just yelling. They captured it like they could read his
run
lips.
Run the fucking ball?
It was like basically they were just throwing quick stuff. He's like, enough of the quick stuff. Throw the ball downfield. Like, they just were doing. And then there was a coach. It might have been from the Cardinals. I forget who it was. And he was like, yeah, it basically looked like. So opposing coach said this in one of the interviews. Opposing coach said, yeah, it looks like if a defensive player was calling the plays, like, that's what it would be, which is exactly what it was. You know, it's right. Like, if a defensive coach is like controlling the offense, here's what you want it to be. Short passes here, quick, you know, run the ball. And it's like, that's not, you know, it's like the exact opposite of the way offenses are going. The Patriots end up, you know, winning last night, but they had like a defensive score and stuff like that. But they're more of a, you know, win with defense. But that's the kind of feel you get, right? When there's like a defensive coach sort of controlling what the offense is doing. They're not allowing the offense to do all the stuff it could do because you're thinking more from the defensive side of the ball.
Right. Yep.
Speaking of Arizona State, they hired in the conference Washington State defensive coordinator Brian Ward. So Jake Dickert's going to call a defense for the LA Bowl that we're going to preview in a little bit. And Washington State lost the linebacker Henley and then a couple of their best receivers. So they've lost a bunch from the portal. But Dickert's going to call the defense. He's going to coach linebackers, I believe, but because Ward is going with Dillingham to Tempe. They also hired Jason Mons to coach the tight ends. He's a Arizona, you know, high school quarterback. I mean, high school coach.
We're going
legend.
With Mons there.
What?
We're going with Mons there.
Is it Mons?
I don't know.
I don't know how to pronounce
it. I kind of want to go with Mons.
Mons?
Yeah.
Jason Mons. Segura High School, he won 7 state titles there. So if you follow Chris Cartman, he's all over all these hires. I think ASU's got their full staff put together now from Dillingham, but he's like one of the most legend, you know, just as far as high school coaches go in Arizona, he's legendary. And so bringing him on staff obviously helps for recruiting. You want Arizona State to be able to recruit so much more talent in Arizona. Obviously, that's going to help to get a guy like that. But 7 state titles under your belt, that's pretty good. So it looks like Dillingham, as a young coach, putting together a really good staff at ASU.
And really trying to lock down Arizona in a way that I don't know that coaches have necessarily prioritized over the years. You've got a lot of outsiders who've been hired in Arizona in the recent past. Dillingham's an insider. And the hope here, I think, is with, you know, Phoenix becoming a pretty good talent hotbed, that you can lock down that talent and lock down the state in a way that hasn't been done before. So I'm interested to see if that happens. If hiring all of these, you know, basically high school legends, I mean, because you've still got Iguano on staff, who is also a high school coaching legend down there. See if it works. I think it's worth trying. I mean, for whatever reason, neither Arizona school has been able to retain Arizona talent. And if one of those schools can figure it out, there's a real program to be built down there.
Yeah. We still got a bunch of news to get to. We only have a few questions. I'm going to take a quick break right now. We'll come back in a minute and finish up all the crazy Pac-12 news, transfer portal stuff, coaching moves, and then we'll get to some of your questions. If you're in the chat, if you're watching us live on YouTube, put a question in the chat. Just put question to start, and we'll try to answer those as well. But back in a minute. All right, we're back.
Oh.
If you're watching on YouTube.
How was your break?
That was quick, right? Was that fast? My break was good. How was yours?
It's all right.
I went for a quick run.
I know. Yeah,
showered.
I tried to get some other work done. Didn't happen.
Published
for
a few
me.
Stories.
Yeah, yeah. Published a few things.
Nice. For Oregon, so because they lost Kenny Dillingham, they hired Will Stein,
yep.
The offensive coordinator. To be the offensive coordinator, he's from UTSA.
Yep.
Out of the Conference USA. but they had a fun offense.
I mean, Bang and Hire. Another really good one, I think, from Landanning.
I like it. So nice job, Landanning.
Still, no, that won't work.
No.
Still Wine. I guess Still Wine works.
Still Wine.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about the offensive coordinator that much, but yeah, we can work it once in a while.
Denny Killingham is now a head coach, so we got to prepare for the idea that Still Wine is going to be too.
Denny Killingham. Nice job. I don't remember that one, using it that much, but
no, I just started it last week.
Oh, okay.
You've got such a bad memory of last week.
I was hungover last week.
Because you were still drunk last week.
No, I was like, I drank too much, then I got up early and worked out, and then I took a nap like before 9 a.m. before this.
Yeah,
and I just felt like crap.
Yeah.
When I did the show. So I
respect that about you.
Yeah. I bring it though for the show that we don't get paid for. Michael Penix, we already talked about that. He's coming back. He used the unfinished business line too.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams did that one. It's kind of like overused, but yeah, it's good news there. Unfortunately for Utah, Dalton Kincaid is going to skip the Rose Bowl and prepare for the NFL draft. There was some kind of injury that, you know, he had kind of been banged up later in the season, but he announced on social media he's not coming back. So that's unfortunate because he's been such a great player for the Utes.
Yep. That is unfortunate. And it will obviously impact the Rose Bowl. However, Utah is a tight end factory. And
true.
So I have no doubt they will be fine because, like, I think Thomas Yasmin was his name. I think
transfer from.
Yeah, he's still haunting the dreams of who was it? Kalen Bullock.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a crazy one. Did he come from like San Diego or something? No, wait. Was that Kincaid? Kincaid maybe came from.
No. From... Thomas Yasmin came from.
Did Kincaid come from the lower level? I thought he did.
Yasmin is the one who's Australian. Kincaid came from a lower level. I don't think it was San Diego, though.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So Kincaid won't be playing, but like you said, it's just like Oregon State losing a running back. Like, they got more.
Wait, it was. It was San Diego. You're right. I'm wrong. This is so rare. No,
it's pretty much always. I don't know if this has happened before, David. Have you ever seen like Stanford get a player that's like really good? Be like a captain or something, and then he like transfers to another Pac-12 program, like Levante Dumani. Like
that never happens.
No,
never heard of it before.
He's going to Utah because they need more linebacker help. You're Troy Taylor. You're taking over. Like I think he was the leading tackler, right? Captain.
Yeah.
I don't know the specifics, but probably he can't get into grad school, and he's going to go to Utah instead. So, oh, great. We get to play them. And
we keep hearing that. I don't know how true it is that these guys are not allowed to get into grad school at Stanford. I think it's part of it. But I think the real part of it is I've already got my Stanford undergraduate degree. Let me go somewhere else where I can win playing football.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much of this is actually like, oh, yeah, they'd never let anybody into grad school. Like. Mm. They had a lot of fifth-year players back in the day. Were those guys all still working on their undergraduate degrees? I don't think so.
Yeah. I don't know.
People act like this just because of like the COVID rules or whatever, that it's like impossible now to be a fifth-year player or to get into grad school at so many different schools. It's not true. It never has been. Stanford had so many fifth-year guys all the time. Those guys were not all still working on their history degrees. They were doing something. They were working on a master's in education or some crap.
Yeah, they did something. Good point there. But it's changed now. I guess it's a good excuse to leave. You get your degree.
It's just excuse making. It's the nature of college football didn't change just suddenly.
Yeah.
Like these guys still did have to hang out and go to school, and they weren't still working all of them on their communications degrees. No. They don't take that long.
Justin Flo, you remember him?
Mm-hmm.
He's in the portal. It's kind of interesting. Not like the recruiting hype hasn't matched his production, I guess.
He's been hurt a lot.
Yeah.
He's had a lot of injuries. This year was probably his first time really on the field for an extended period of time, and he didn't look great. But that was it. Before that, it was all injuries.
Yeah. Speaking of team captains, Arizona State, like, if you want to, like, just watch the portal there, like, there's influx. They're going in. They're going out. But Ladarius Henderson, best offensive lineman, multi-year starter, team captain. He's going to Michigan.
He wants to be in a playoff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. So there's when you get a new coach and you're gonna like change the culture, like Coach Prime is gonna go in there and cut guys and stuff. And you try to get the guys that are like good enough to stay, right? And obviously, like Henderson's really good, and I think Dillingham would be trying to do the same thing. But ASU is losing some guys that are like legit, and then you're gonna lose some guys that are just like new culture, new team, whatever. Yeah. Move on. You just gotta try to limit those like difference maker players. Keep them around if you can. But, you know, that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, so. And some guys are going to leave pretty much immediately, but I think you still recruit your own portal hard. Because yes. I think it's the new coaching hire tendency, which is, like, if the new coach comes in, you have nothing to lose by entering the portal. You get more attention and make your new guy recruit you again.
Yeah.
But I think that's the reality is see if you can recruit those guys back. They're already familiar with the school. I would say largely – most guys like the familiar, and if you can give them a good enough pitch, like ASU's got, I think, four of their defensive linemen in the portal right now. See if you can get those guys back, because you're not going to get four new good defensive linemen in the portal.
It's really hard.
Yeah, so just see if you can land your guys back. But I think it's just the simple reality of the thing is that, and I think the same goes for Stanford, too. I mean, I think if Troy Taylor can go at them and give them a good pitch, maybe you get some of those guys back.
Yeah. Arizona. Wide receiver Dorian Singer.
Talked about that last
week.
Did we
talk about that last week?
Yeah, we sure did.
The one that got in a little scuffle with Jane DeLora. A couple offensive linemen for Stanford, too. Miles Hinton and Drake Nugent.
Yep.
Nugget.
Yep. Nugent. The portal. Yep. Ted Nugent.
In the portal. There's also, there have been some early NFL declarations. So do you remember former Colorado cornerback Christian Gonzalez? He was awesome. He transferred to Oregon. I think he's a sophomore, but really just because of the COVID year, he's going to the NFL. Kai Blue Kelly, the Stanford cornerback. They listed him as a senior, but I think he had a year of eligibility going to corner. Tanner the cornerback going to the NFL. Tanner McKee. We thought he might transfer because he didn't really have like the tape. I mean, everyone talked about him being an NFL quarterback. But he didn't play.
Why would you want to play any more college football after getting sacked like 75 times this year?
Because you could go, like, what if he went to Oregon State?
Yeah, what's Jonathan Smith going to do? He's got probably trauma from dealing with college coaches. Oh, wow.
Well,
My head coach actually changed his entire coaching philosophy just to abuse me. Like, he decided to start the slow mesh literally just so I could get hit more. He actually has a vendetta against me. What will this next guy do to me? No, I'm going to go to the NFL where these guys, you know, are more professional and won't have a personal vendetta against me. Yeah, but he didn't have a good year, so I don't think he's going to get drafted. If he does, it's going to be late round.
That would just make so much more sense to go to, like, Oregon State where you could – I mean, hell, go to UCLA. Like, I don't
care.
He
massively regressed as a prospect this year.
Right. So you got to like rebuild your image.
Yeah. I mean, I would say last year was decent enough, I guess. I think it was more that he just kind of fit the prototype. You know, he's got the size and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know who's in his ear telling him he's a surefire NFL prospect right now.
Yeah.
Because I can't see it. He doesn't put enough good film out there.
True. But he's going to the NFL. Luke Musgrave, my guy at Oregon State, the tight end. He's a junior going to the NFL. Tavion Thomas, we already knew about that. The Utah running back, he opted out of the Pac-12 championship game. And then Clark Phillips, the third. I don't know what year he is. I think he was probably a junior. He's going to the NFL as well.
Yeah, he's a true junior.
True junior. Okay, yeah. So those are the guys that I just had noted kind of going into this.
Yep.
Yeah. Now we got to do some previews.
We've got some previews, everyone.
Yeah, we have like actual games to talk about coming up this week. You know what would be cool?
What?
So you have like this whole season, right? I got the Pac-12 2022
There's a
schedule
full season.
In front of me.
Yeah.
I mean, 13 weeks. Everyone gets a bye week. It's like, you know, some weeks there's a Thursday game or there's a Friday game, which is kind of cool. They're all off by themselves. And then sometimes we get like three late games or whatever. But, you know, once the bowl season comes around, we got like a couple weeks, right?
Yeah.
Spread it all out.
Yeah.
Just watch all the games.
Certainly nothing conflicting with each other, like nothing at the same time.
I mean, if you're going to say, let's do, I don't know, December 17th, let's have a couple of. You know what we could do? We could have two Pac-12 teams play on December 17th.
Yeah,
you know?
But have them
because it's only two, you could have them at like wildly different times, right?
Right. You would think you could have a morning game or a night game or like afternoon, whatever you want to do. Because there's not another Pac-12 game for like 11 days after this.
So like condensing them into like a single time slot would be insane.
Right.
Like it's just a waste of everyone's eyeballs.
But that's what we got, people.
Yeah, baby. And one of them got moved to make this happen. The Vegas Bowl was originally going to be 4:30.
Yeah. Well, that was like because of the Raiders or something
whatever.
Like that.
Who gives a shit?
All right. Well, technically the first game, even though they're like back-to-back, like right on top of each other, we got number 14.
Oregon State Beavers.
Taking on the Florida Gators. Go, Gators!
Nice.
11:30 a.m. on ESPN, 6-6 Florida, major underdog, taking on number 14 Oregon State in Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. Oregon State is a 10-point favorite.
Mm.
So Oregon State doesn't have a quarterback, but it hasn't mattered for several weeks.
True.
They do have like just about a million running backs, including the offensive freshman of the year, Damian Martinez.
Yeah. Stud.
Their defense is legit. Legit as hell.
Maybe the best.
Florida maybe has some guys. We're not going to do any research, but Florida may have lost some guys already to transfer portal or whatever. Yeah. They were also like big ass for most of the last part of the year. They lost to Vanderbilt in their second to last game. Vanderbilt.
Hmm.
Vanderbilt. Give me those Beavers.
Yeah. Florida is not good.
Not good.
Now, they got some athletes, right? But I feel like even though Oregon State's away from home, what happened last year? I'm going to look this up real quick. Do you remember? Because I think I was like bullish going in Oregon State.
I think they lost.
They did. I think everybody in the Pac-12 lost, right? They played Utah State in the bowl game and lost 24-13 in the LA Bowl.
Yeah.
That's a little concerning, right?
That's a little bit concerning. I remember literally nothing about this football game.
Finished the season, three-game win streak. They had lost that close one to Washington. I'm talking about this year.
The only thing I remember is that at the beginning of the season, you were trying to tell me how horrible Utah State was because their opener was against...
They were supposed to be bad. No, the beginning of the season, I said they were bad.
Yeah,
and then, but they were really
their
good.
Their opener was against Washington State, and they won at Washington State.
Yeah.
And you were trying to tell me all preseason how horrible they were. And then they went 11-3.
Yeah.
But anyway, they beat Oregon State in the game.
Yeah. And Oregon State's covered the last three. Actually, four or five. I think they covered their last six games. Yeah, they've covered. Yeah, since the Stanford game, they covered against Washington State. Covered against Colorado, covered against Washington, Oregon, Cal, ASU, Oregon. They're a cover machine right now. So give me the Beavs. I'm going to go along with you, even though I need to try to catch up. I like the Beavs in this spot. 10's a lot, but I'm going to take the Beavers in this one.
Yep.
And then the second bowl game, which starts like 5 minutes later.
Washington State Cougars.
Taking on the Fresno State Bulldogs. That's again because Bulldogs are disgusting fucking foul creatures. 12:30.
Just really pissed off some people.
12:30 p.m. on ABC. Washington State taking on Fresno State. So if you didn't check in on Fresno State after the USC game, so we saw Jake Haener apparently like just die on the field like he was done. He came back like 2 weeks later and was totally fine.
They brought out the gun like, you know, what you do for a horse that breaks his leg. Yeah. They're like, should we take him on a cart or just shoot him? And like, yeah, just take him on a cart, I guess. Like, you sure don't want to shoot him? Like, no. And he's back.
So they started the season really bad. They were 1-4 with losses at USC, at Connecticut, and at Boise State. And then they won 8 straight. Including avenging their loss to Boise State 28-16. Jake Haener came back, and they were a much different team, much better. Their offense improved. Jeff Tedford is a wizard. Washington State, good defense most of the time. Didn't look very good in the Apple Cup.
No.
They're already losing some pieces.
Give me Fresno State. Absolutely no question about it in my mind. Stone cold lock. Jeff Tedford is a genius. And also, this will most likely be a Fresno State home game.
Yeah, this is tough, man. Because, like,
you really need to catch up with me, but you can't fault my logic at all.
No, I like your logic here. I do.
You can't fault it. You try to, but you
Mountain
can't.
Mountain West champs.
Mm-hmm.
Washington State lost two of their receivers. Right? Let's mm-hmm. let's pull up what Washington State did at the end of the season. Let's just like let's see if I can convince myself. But losing one of your better linebackers.
They lost at USC, against Oregon State, and against Utah. The three wins came against three of the basement dwellers in the Pac-12, Stanford, Arizona State, and Arizona, and then got absolutely smoked by Washington in the Apple Cup.
Yeah, it was 51-33.
Basically, the story of their season is beating a lot of crappy teams and losing to literally everyone with a pulse.
Yeah, they went on the road and beat Arizona. That's pretty good. You know what I'm going to do?
You're going to go opposite?
I'm going to go opposite.
Damn.
I'm going to...
Rest in peace, Ryan's picks.
So that I'll know going to the last game, am I down one or am I down three? Give me those Cougs.
Yeah, wow.
Going in, I'm getting 3 points.
Do you disagree that this is going to be a Fresno State home game?
No.
Like, it's going to be like 15,000 in like just a sea of Fresno State.
They travel.
Yeah.
For sure. Washington State went to Arizona. It was a very feisty game there. A lot of emotions. Jaden Delora, it didn't matter. I like Jake Dickert in this spot.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I need it. Mm-hmm. I would normally pick Fresno State, but I'm gonna take the points. I'm gonna take Washington State here.
Wow, love it.
Yeah, that's good stuff there. All right, just real quick, our final power rankings. Do we want to adjust them after the bowl games, or
you don't know what Jeff Tedford's record in bowl games is?
Very bad.
7-3.
Okay, that's good.
Yep.
You know what Jake Dickert's record in bowl games is?
What?
Did they make it last year?
They might have made one last year.
Let me see real quick. I'll pull it up. I didn't write it down. They went 7-5. Did they not go to a bowl?
They must have gone to a bowl.
No, that was last.
They lost the Sun Bowl.
Yes, Central Michigan. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a 7.5-point favorite. We both took them.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work. Mm-hmm. But now I'm getting points.
Yep, you sure are.
I like that. All right.
Undefeated in bowl games at Fresno State, Jeff Tedford.
Nice. So power rankings. Are we going to adjust them again? Are they a thing anymore? Like, are we going to adjust them post?
I don't know. I think we'll adjust them maybe after the whole thing.
After the whole thing? Okay. Yeah. Right now we have Utah, USC, Washington, Oregon State, Oregon, UCLA, Washington State, Arizona, Arizona State, Cal, Stanford, Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Probably won't change that much, but
no, probably not.
That's sort of where we are. We have a couple questions. We have a voicemail.
All right.
Let me play it for you.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. Just kind of wondering with the three teams this year in the Pac-12 that typically have the most talent with Washington, Oregon, USC. I was wondering which one of those three teams surprised you the most with how they came out this year. I know not all of them were necessarily in a full-on rebuild, but it seemed like they're in bad spots in 2021 a little bit. So just curious which of the three surprised you the most. Thanks, guys.
Okay, great question. So Washington, I had as a 7-5 team, and they went 10-2. So that's probably my answer right there. I also had Oregon as a 7-5 team, and they went 9-3, which is not the same as 10-2. And I had USC as a 9-3 team that went 11-1. So I would say Washington surprised me the most.
Let's see. I had Washington at also 7-5. Right.
And what'd you have Oregon at?
I had Oregon
8-4.
I had Oregon at 8-4. Yeah. And so a little better than you.
And USC, you had what, 10-2?
I had 9-3, I think.
Okay. So we had basically the same. So your answer is also Washington.
Yeah. I would say Washington a little bit more surprising that he was able to turn around that quickly. I mean, to win 10 games, pretty impressive there. So.
Yeah, I would say all three. I think you've got to be happy with the job the head coaches did.
Yeah.
I think, you know, obviously Jonathan Smith and Kalen DeBoer were the clear favorites for the Coach of the Year award, but Riley and Land Danning were in the next tier down.
Yeah.
But they were up there too.
It's going to be harder for those, like, if you expect Oregon and USC to have a lot more talent than, you know, I think Riley could have won if they won the Pac-12, but outside of that, I don't think so.
So is the only question this one text message?
I think so, yeah. Do you want to read that?
All right, this is a text message. I think you guys misunderstood my text. No one debates that Caleb was hurt during the game, just that the announcers blew it out of proportion. I guess that's what happened when a bunch of privileged prima donnas, I'm guessing, get on the field.
Is it if privileged prima?
Well, prima donnas is spelled wrong, and it's if instead of, but I can translate.
Okay.
David, I am not surprised that Utah fans thought you were a USC fan. I corrected them when I saw that online, but I should have let it go because you obviously love being USC's bitch boy. Maybe when your rival fails miserably, you can tease them instead of punching the other fan base down. Maybe I just don't understand the culture at a basketball school. Extend Chip Kelly and have fun playing Iowa and Northwestern. Utah fans are so interesting. They're so interesting and extremely, like, and I'm not talking to you, smart Utah fan, watching this. A lot of very dumb. A lot of very, very stupid. Because when I called Kyle Whittingham a blessed idiot, first, all football coaches are dumb. All of them. All 100% of them, very stupid. When I'm calling him a blessed idiot, and I'm, like, happily calling him that, it's because I'm rooting for your team. I want them to do well. But I also can't turn my brain off, which is something that you guys seem to have done very well. So when I say a blessed idiot, I mean, it's working out for him, but he's doing stupid things, and that's fine. That's good. Mm-hmm. Most football coaches are doing stupid things all the time. It's fine. It's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean anything negative about you.
Yeah.
It doesn't impugn upon your character personally.
I think so, it means you disrespect their program. That's what's, you know,
is he being deified? Like, what are we talking about here? We're talking about Kyle Whittingham. Like, the guy who's got, like, this vacant expression on his face half the time.
Yeah.
That's Kyle Whittingham on the field. That's fine. It's fine. And he's a really good coach. But he makes stupid clock decisions. And guess what? That's also true of, like, all but maybe one Pac-12 coach consistently and regularly. It's the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
So I truly don't understand any of this. Like, and also the USC thing. I don't know, maybe listen to, like, any other show besides last one if you want to listen to my thoughts on USC.
That was, like, the weirdest thing.
It's literally if you have anything critical to say about my team, you are rooting for the other team and I hate you.
Right.
And just real sign of literally every thought is firing through a single synapse. Just one synapse. It's the only one that can fire, so they have to take a break, you know, and cue everything up before, like, another thought can come through.
That happens sometimes where you're like, so you tweet something or whatever. Like, I forget what it was. I think I tweeted, like, it was the Oregon Utah game. There was a big comeback. It wasn't the Oregon Utah game. It was a big comeback game. It was Oregon State, maybe. And I was like, if this holds, USC is going to play Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game. Like, if this score holds. I didn't say, I think the score is going to hold. And people are just like, old takes, terrible take. You think you hate the – I'm like, all I said is that if the score holds. I didn't say, like, I think it will or anything like that. But like you said, there's a single synapse. Like, someone's disrespecting my team. They didn't think we could come back. He didn't think we could come back and win. See, you're an idiot. We came back and won. Like, I was rooting for you to win. Like, so, I wanted you to, like.
I like to think that I generally, like, through my own tweets, I have kind of winnowed down my following away from people who are, like, really keen aficionados of sports talk radio. Like, ones who are like, yeah, I've got to take you suck. just because I'm so obnoxious on Twitter. So those people have unfollowed or blocked me most of the time. But then a game like this, where, like, one person, like, quote tweets my tweet, and then it gets to their followers who are all, like, dumb mouth breathers the same as they are. Like, I think this one, it was like, it was some Utah dude who's like a media guy. I don't even know who it was, but clearly like a sports talk radio idiot.
Yeah.
And he quote tweeted it. And so then a bunch of his idiot followers decided to tweet at me. And it's like, you're out of your element, Donnie. Like, this is not like, I have nothing against Utah or Kyle Whittingham. He's a blessed idiot, but that's a great thing in my estimation. Look, think about how much better life would be if you were just walking through it as a blessed idiot. Like, I can make any decision whatsoever and it's going to work out for me because I'm stupid, but I'm blessed.
But a lot of it is because you've made a lot of other good decisions that you can overcome certain bad ones.
You've built a great program. Like, yes. This is all the facts that are in evidence about Kyle Whittingham should make it so that you understand that anyone critiquing him is doing either with their tongue firmly in cheek or they themselves are dumb. But either way, you shouldn't engage with them. Like, I'm essentially like half trolling, quit kidding on the square, because no one is disputing the notion that Kyle Whittingham has built an elite program at Utah. Like, for Utah to be doing the shit it is baffling. It's bananas. And so, you know, joking about the fact that, yeah, even this idiot can screw up clock management and it works out for him is just talking good about your program. Like, yeah. That's it. He's a blessed idiot. That's the truth.
Nice. All right. We got a couple, questions that came through on a chat. So let's get to those. This is from EVS. Let me pull it up. Dave, what's the word on the Dante Moore visit to UCLA? Much ado about nothing, or is it something? Just jumped on, so sorry if you'd already talked about it.
I mean, the dude officially visited UCLA, so it's something.
This is a quarterback from Michigan.
Yeah, so this is the number...
Elite 11 quarterback that's committed to Oregon.
Yeah, he's one of the top three quarterbacks in the country in the class of 2023. Committed to Oregon. Obviously, they had the offensive coordinator change. He was trying to do a sneaky surprise official visit to UCLA. It got out on Thursday.
Sneaky surprise.
Sneaky surprise. It's that time of year. And then he did... he took the official visit. Had a good time. But it still sounds like he's potentially going to take more visits. Mm-hmm. So if there's a flip incoming, it's, I would guess, probably not going to happen immediately. So we'll see. I think UCLA is certainly putting its toe in the water, testing the waters a little bit more in recruiting right now.
They're going to try the recruiting thing?
They're going to try the recruiting thing. I think they're going to try the NIL thing. They're going to try the whole thing.
Wow.
So we'll see if it works out. I think the reality is it's not just deciding you're going to do NIL at a real level. It isn't enough by itself because a lot of people are doing that. You still have to put in the legwork. So they're getting guys on campus. They're getting in homes. We'll see. But it's certainly more interesting than it was like 2 years ago.
Recruiting seems overrated. You know, why would you want to go do that?
Yep.
Whatever. Mark, speaking of UCLA quarterbacks, any chance that DJU winds up at, he spelled this wrong, F-U-C-L-A.
Oh, so, wow. Why do they always mix that up? Yeah, it's not, there's no F at the beginning there.
They always have the dollar sign instead of the S for some reason.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. No, I was U dollar sign C as bitch boy, actually, not USC's. So frankly, I don't get it. But yeah. Anyway, DJ
Ungulele.
Yeah, right? DJ. I'm gonna go Uyagalele. That's what I'm doing. Okay.
I haven't heard that one.
That's what I'm going with because I'm just gonna go the classic Polynesian where you just pronounce every single letter.
Yeah.
I'm not adding an N because he's gone back and forth on this, so I'm just choosing my own.
It does change. To be fair, like we cover guys in high school, and they're like, I know that I was told this by like the family, and then the broadcast.
I respect people who stick with their whatever. If you want to pronounce it, whatever you want, but you get one, and if you change it, then I'm changing it too. I'm going to pronounce it the way it makes sense to me. We all get to interpret these things however we want, and I think you give the person whose name it actually is first dibs. For sure.
We'll give him a chance.
Yeah, but after that, no, sorry. My turn.
You wonder if it's like they like literally came through high school. This is what my parents, my family has been called this forever. And then like Chris Fowler or something comes up and says the name and he just goes like, yeah, that sounds fine. I'll go with that. Like, I don't want to correct him. Like, I bet you that's happened. Like, oh, this is a bit famous like guy. I'm not going to correct him. We'll just go. And well, then, yeah, it, no, then it becomes the thing.
Like, there's the kids you grow up with who are just like, I'm giving up. I'm just going to go with whatever these idiot white right. folk want to pronounce my name as. and then you learn later that you were like, no, that's not your name at all. And I'm always like, what, you just didn't believe I could do it? You didn't believe my mouth parts could make that sound work? Like, just tell me your goddamn name.
I know.
And then I won't learn it a different way.
One of my buddies from Brazil, and his name is João. And I love it. It's a cool name, but like everyone just calls him Jojo. And I'm like, it's not that hard. Like, why are you just, I refuse to call him Jojo. I'm like, hey, yeah. João, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever.
No, it's just, anyway. Anyway, DJU, I think he's one of a few options that UCLA is evaluating. I don't think he's top of the list for obvious reasons, looking at his Clemson performance. But I think he's, you know, I think somebody they're going to evaluate. Chip Kelly's talked to him, so we'll see.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see where UCLA goes and Oregon State. Obviously, teams that have talent. I mean, how much success could Oregon State have had with a quarterback? And this isn't like... You could say that, like, if you were like, if it was like Justin Wilcox, like Cal was like, man, the defense was good. They ran the ball. Like, Jay Knott was just awesome. Like, that's not the case, obviously. I mean, he's awesome, but like, they weren't good at all this other stuff. But just, they were just a quarterback away, you know? And obviously, that's not the case. But for like a Jonathan Smith coach team to be like just a quarterback away, it's just like, come on. Like,
I know.
It's been years. It's like, we got to fix this.
Yeah, no. And if I'm a quarterback and looking at like different offenses to be in, obviously Chip Kelly's is an enticing one. But so is Jonathan Smith's.
Yeah.
I mean, Oregon State should be an attractive destination. And I'm not saying for like a transfer quarterback with like many, many years of eligibility left. But if you're a grad transfer coming from a lower program, and you want to say, I want to be an NFL quarterback and I want to have the profile to do it, Oregon State, that's your spot. Like, go do that.
Why not?
Because you'll be in a really good offense that's tailored to good quarterback play. And looking at the program, they're 9-3. I mean, they were not that far away. And,
no.
They return an excellent running back. Their offensive line, I think, will still be good. And their defense was legit as hell right. this year.
Without, being star-driven, it was just, Bray came in and did a nice job there.
Yeah.
But if they have another year or two of just like they could run the ball, they play good defense, and the quarterback stinks, you're like, I'm going to start questioning the offense at that point. I'm like, I don't know. Like, what's going on?
No, but this year, I mean, look, I think Nolan, we all talked ourselves into it, but he wasn't really the answer either.
And we thought he was.
Gulbranson is just a guy. Get in a really good quarterback and then see what happens.
Yeah. Danny. On YouTube says, would you consider Utah's season successful? What about UCLA and Oregon? You won the Pac-12. I think it's successful.
Yeah.
I mean, it fell short of the expectations I had for Utah coming in when I picked them to win. And I think I picked them to go to the playoff. I think I ended up 11-1 or whatever. We'll argue about the Florida game. I just thought that was crap. It was a 6-6 team. Like, just don't lose to that team. And, you know, other games down the road, you got Cam gets hurt and you go on the road and lose to Oregon. But it's still successful. You won the Pac-12. Like, you had to kind of, like, a lot of things had to happen to make the Pac-12 championship, but you won. So, I would say, yeah, it's successful, especially for Utah. Like, if this was, like, Alabama and you, like, won the SEC but missed the playoff, like, then you're not successful. But it's only the second time Utah's ever won the Pac-12. So, yeah, I would say successful.
Yeah, I agree. There's another good question. This is from Big T37. It's the most recent one.
Oh, let me... okay, I'll put it up. Oh, Big T37. Oh, wait, hold on. It's successful about UCLA and Oregon. Were those successful?
Oh. Oregon and UCLA, I would say par. What would you say? Par? Like, I don't think it was unsuccessful.
Yeah, I think...
They just fell short of their goals. I think UCLA... Well, I wouldn't say UCLA fell short of its goals. It's just it fell short of being an obviously above par season because they or below par. they won most of the games they should, stole a game that they shouldn't have won, you know, against Utah, if you're looking preseason, but then lost a game that they should have won against Arizona. So it just kind of evens out to, yeah, okay, it went fine. And Oregon, I mean, you can point very obviously to the Bo Nix injury is the main issue. If that doesn't happen, they're probably 11-1, and the Pac-12 championship game is a play-in for the playoff. But they did. So I think they fell short for more explainable reasons. More, you know, oh, okay, if only that one thing hadn't happened, it's not a reflection on the coach. But either way, I don't think you can say they're clearly successful seasons, but also not unsuccessful.
Yeah, I would say, like, I think UCLA held serve. Like, they just were, like, you felt like they would be, like, 9-3 because the out-of-conference schedule wasn't that hard. You lost a game you shouldn't have. You won one. I feel like it was fine. I think Oregon, you could say, is a little more successful just because you had the coaching change. You brought in Bo Nix. You weren't really sure what was going to happen there. Kenny Dillingham was young, and you didn't know. And just I think there was a lot of success there, beating Utah after getting clobbered twice last year. I would give Oregon's a little more success, like give it a higher success rate than UCLA.
I'll buy it.
Big T 37. More annoying fan base, Oregon State, Utah, or Oregon?
So here, I'll start with this. I think you're having the right conversation, judging on my interactions with people on Twitter, except I would probably just throw out Oregon State immediately.
Yeah, I wouldn't throw it.
I don't have too many problems with Oregon State fans. There's not, generally, I think a fan base that has been humbled for a long period of time generally isn't that obnoxious.
Right.
That's not always true. Arizona fans, I'm looking at you. But that might be because of the basketball success. That you still have the stuff. Like belief. Yeah. But you haven't been humbled by your football program, and you should be. But Oregon State, I'd throw out of the conversation. I think Utah and Oregon, they both have arguments. Utah fans, so I would say for both fan bases, I'm not speaking about you, listener. You're amazing.
Sounds like you're very specifically speaking to the listener.
Not you. Not you. Okay. No. The other ones, the unwashed ones. I would say Oregon fans I found extremely obnoxious and also kind of stupid, like the back half of them. Again, not you. Not you. I love you. The back half of Oregon fans extremely stupid midseason and not understanding things like at a very basic level. Like, I'm not insulting your program. Your program's fine. It's a joke. Utah fans, I've never seen a fan base so profoundly insecure when they are doing well. That was bizarre during the Pac-12 championship game. And again, all this is anecdotal because it's just based on my mentions, because I don't interact with you otherwise. But just some, again,
you feel like you're above the Utah fans.
Well, again, just some profoundly stupid things going on. And I'm not saying all fan bases don't have their profoundly stupid. I mean, UCLA has some profoundly stupid fans. Love you too. Not you. You know it's not you. It's just, again, it's like that sports talk radio thing. And I think, again, I am I'm in a little bit of a bubble. You know, we all have our interaction bubbles where I avoid most of that by carefully curating my following and the people I interact with by either blocking them or they have blocked me. But either way, I'm not interacting with them that much. I think it's because they're external fan bases. Because I've blocked a lot of UCLA fans because they've got that same tendency to just, like, the stupid reaction. And here's the thing. I'm very sensitive to being stupid about sports. I'm stupid about sports in a lot of ways. But I just I don't like it when I'm doing my job. And even when I'm trolling, I'm like, you know, I'm actually watching the game. I'm trying to pay attention to the tendencies, you know, the whole thing. Like, I'm trying to, like, actually look at this from an analytical perspective. And then I've got just people just spewing stupidity, vitriol at me. And I'm like, this is not worth my time. Now, sometimes I'll engage with it and troll right back. And then other times I'm like, oh, this is too dumb. It's too dumb. I'm not dealing with it. Okay. So to answer your question, I'll go Oregon.
So all the Utah talk and you go Oregon.
I'll go Oregon because I'm remembering some interactions midseason, and also they've got at least one psychopath who, like, set up multiple accounts just to tweet at me. Just to. So.
Nice. Good one there. Okay. Let's see. Planet Moolah wants to know, and I know you haven't. Well, maybe you have. What's the best bowl matchup outside of the playoff teams?
Utah Penn State, baby.
I like that one. I haven't looked at a lot of the other.
Look, I think Texas Washington could be a lot of fun in the Alamo Bowl. I think you're probably going to see some offensive fun, obviously, from Washington, and I think Texas will keep up. And I think the one we're going to watch this weekend, Washington State Fresno State, has potential to be sneaky good.
Okay. And oh, there's one more. I didn't see. Billy Bob says, North Texas has hired Washington State's offensive coordinator as their new head coach. Did you see this?
Nope.
I didn't see this either. Pete Thamel, sources. North Texas is finalizing the deal to make Washington State offensive coordinator Eric Morris the school's next head coach. Ah, that's probably good for me and my pick, right?
Yeah.
Might have to change that.
No, it's written in gold.
We're still on the show.
Yeah, it's been burned.
Plus,
into the tablet.
I control all the stuff, so I can change.
No, the tablets have been brought down from the mountain. They have been, we've inscribed the great picks on them, and now you can't change them.
Yeah. Interesting, because he came over from Incarnate Word, right?
Yep.
And brought Cameron Ward with him.
True that.
So we'll see what goes on there. But yeah, thanks, Billy Bob, for a little breaking news at the end of the show. It's all good. How long did we go? Hour and a half. Not too bad for like two games to preview. I got another live one coming up at noon. If you guys are bored, we're going to do a Peristyle podcast with Chris Trevino. So talk about a bunch of USC stuff. So you can get to all that. But again, everyone out there, go out there. Hug your loved ones. Swing your sword. RIP Mike Leach. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I know we probably didn't do him justice, but we gave our little tributes in our own little way. Any final thoughts, David?
I have no final thoughts.
You don't like the final thoughts. When we're done.
Yeah, no, I'm usually done about 10 minutes before we finish.
Awesome stuff. Okay. I like to drag it on a little bit longer to make you super uncomfortable.
No, it's great. It's great. I've got nothing else to do. I don't have, you know, my day just like full of shit I need to do constantly. Mm. No, nice. let's talk longer. Let's babble.
We'll let it go. That is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.